It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 342. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please remember to visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can send me an email with questions, any tech question that you have, a suggestion for a future show topic. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow and facebook.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, and I will confirm that quickly. I have a lot to talk about. The first thing on the agenda is a client story, something I went through this past Sunday, and a big thank you to Winston, who is in the chat right now and is suffering from the flu, and I didn't know this, and I reached out to him on Sunday morning to help me with this problem because it really got messed up. It's an SSL certificate renewal. Now, it should be very easy, but we had to go through a couple extra steps because my client allowed the SSL certificate to expire. And since it expired, he no longer could get his email via his Palm Pre phones using ActiveSync to Small Business Server 2003. So he knows this, and he went online to GoDaddy, and he renewed the certificate. And then I think the person he was chatting with for the tech support kind of misled him. You know, I don't think they really understood why they had problems. You know, I don't think they really understood what his operating system was and where the changes had to be made. And they walked him through a couple things that just went down an ugly path. So I get the panic phone call Saturday night, and I said I would look into this. And I logged in Saturday night, and I just wasn't sure where the problem was because I seen, and let's talk about that. To renew a certificate, if you already have an SSL certificate, you have to renew this in the Internet Information Services Manager, IIS Manager. When you load IIS Manager, on the left-hand side, you have the name of the server, and you can expand the box. You have application, pools, websites, and you have web service extensions. So I'm going to open up the box websites. Now you want to highlight the default website. This is where you need to make the changes. When you right-click on default website, you can then select properties. And under properties, you now have to go to a tab, directory security. This is where you manage your SSL certificates. These are the steps for IIS 6, as Winston reminded me, and they're going to be a little different in IIS 7. So for IIS 6, we've went into the properties of the default website, directory security, and now there's an area at the bottom called secure communications, and you have three options. If you pick server certificate, it starts a wizard, and this is where you need to be very careful, And there's an option to replace the current certificate. There's remove the current certificate. And there's renew the current certificate. Somewhere, this went wrong. Somebody advised my client in this section, and they advised them incorrectly. I had to go through the renewal process, but I had to start the process over. So I picked renew the current certificate, and I went through the wizard where it generated a text file that I had to save. So it prompts you when you go through this wizard where it's going to create the special file that you now have to submit to the company where you purchased your SSL certificate. So you get this file. It's a text file that you can open in Notepad, and you can literally select all, and you can copy and paste. So I had the account information for GoDaddy for my client. I picked the renew the current certificate, went through that process. I now have this file. I logged into GoDaddy, and I had to have them rekey the certificate. Now, there's a couple things here. Because the certificate was already keyed and something happened and it was applied incorrectly, I had to select rekey. If we're doing it properly the first time, once you renew, you can now have them generate the ticket, the actual certificate, and there will be an option where you can now cut and paste the text that IIS just generated. What this is doing, it's you are guaranteeing that you are on the proper server that the SSL certificate belongs. And this is the authentication process to have the certificate generated for your server. And what I've done is now I've got the file. I go on to GoDaddy. I said, rekey this. It asked me to paste the information. And it's very simple. There's a nice box. I pasted the information. I clicked submit. And it generated a new SSL certificate for me to download. Now, this is the great part. I click download. It's a zip file. There's two files. I unzip it to a directory on my server. I then take a look at the two files. And now I go back in because I was still in the wizard. And when you continue, it now asked you to point to the certificate that you got, that you purchased for the renewal. The wizard knows that I now have to point to a file that was downloaded from GoDaddy. So I now point to the cert file that I just downloaded, and it continued. It finished. Once I was finished the process of pointing to the cert file that I downloaded from GoDaddy, I go back and I highlight the server name in IIS Manager. I right-click. There's an All Tasks option. And the second option down is Restart IIS. So it will stop the service, and then it will restart the service. Once that was done, I called my client and I said, hey, check your email to see if it's working. And of course, it was working, and there was no more error messages. Just to recap, you want to go through the wizard on the server to renew the SSL certificate. And if you've never done it before, it is a very easy process. Once you do that, you start the process on your server. Then you go to the website where you're renewing your SSL certificate. You make sure that that's renewed. And then you begin the process on, like for this example, it was GoDaddy. And once I went through that process, it generated the cert file. I downloaded, I continued the wizard, pointed it to the file. I was finished. I want to thank Winston for his help in straightening out the situation for my client. And my client was very happy. And I was happy because I got to fix it after spending some time trying to figure out what was wrong. Let me bring in the expert. Ask him so he can help me through the problem. So I really appreciate that. How about some voicemail here? And then I will get into some emails. This is another voicemail, actually a dual voicemail from Alan. He is now seems to be a regular contributor here on the Mike Tech Show, and I enjoy it. Alan, keep them coming. Here's a couple more comments.
Hey, Mike, this is Alan Nation over here in Seattle, Washington. Hey, I'm listening to the show, and you're talking about your WordPress site and the upgrade, and I got to agree with you strongly about keeping current on the plugins and WordPress. I had a client who let the WordPress get a couple of versions back that upgraded a few of their plugins, and that just caused a tremendous amount of mess because some of the plugins would not update because WordPress was so old, and WordPress wouldn't update because some of the plugin problems. And I ended up having to rebuild their whole site, WordPress site, without any plugins, and then add those plugins back in one at a time. So you are right. Let everybody know that keeping current definitely will make WordPress happy.
Hey, I just ran into something using Microsoft Live that I just had to share on the show. I went to sign my daughter up so that she could start using Word and Excel online, doing school projects and things like that. After I got her account set up, it wanted to verify, or it wanted me to log in so that I could verify I was a parent because she was under their age limit. Well, to verify, Microsoft wants to charge me 50 cents on my credit card to show that I'm an adult. And I just think that's wrong that they're doing that. That's the only choice. Once you start the sign-up process, they lock you in and won't let you get around it. So any of you guys thinking about signing up a younger person for a live account so that they can use some of the online stuff, just change their age. Don't make them a young age. And Microsoft won't be able to keep doing this to people. So thanks for the great show, Mike. Look forward to next week.
All right. That's very interesting about Microsoft Live. There should be a better way to prove you're an adult than just charging a credit card, because you could have a credit card and not be an adult and not be of legal age, and they certainly shouldn't be charging you any money to prove that you are an adult. We need a better authentication process. Maybe a driver license scan or something that, just something that you can prove that your age. And we need technology that everybody could use to be able to secure to know, hey, this person's over 18 or over 21, whatever the requirements are because of the content that they're going to deliver. I thought that was an interesting comment since I don't use Microsoft Live, and I want to thank Alan for taking the time to leave me the voicemail messages, and he's dead on about if you are using WordPress, you have to stay current because it's so popular, and you heard me talk about that a week or so ago, that you can't stay too far behind on the versions of the what's released because they're always doing security fixes, and it's very important to stay on top of WordPress so your website is not vulnerable to any kind of hacking or defacing. Let's get to some email. This is from Tom, and he says, "Hi, Mike, longtime listener to the show. Keep up the great work. My LAN consists of two main pieces of hardware, a Netgear WNR3500L, Gigabit wireless router, and the Netgear Gigabit Switch GS105. Should the router's DHCP be able to serve up IP addresses to the computers downstream of the switch? Absolutely. Or will each computer need to have a static IP? No. As a matter of fact, I should really look up the switch. The GS105, I'm almost positive that is not a smart switch. If it was, you would have had to give it an IP address that's part of the subnet that's being used for DHCP. Not within the range of the DHCP that's being released, but part of that subnet so it could talk to it properly. That's if you had a smart switch. since the GS105, I believe it's just a 5-port gigabit switch, anything connected to that will absolutely get the IP address from the router. This is from different Alan. He says, this is blogger backup and how to handle the XML file it generates. Hi, Mike. Happy New Year to you and your family. I've been using the Blogger Backup utility for several years now to make weekly backups of my blog. The backup generates an XML file, which is now 7 megs. I've always wondered how to use this file if I ever needed it. Could you please explain what a person can do with this XML file should a person leave Blogger or if the site ever shut down? When you get this file, you can now take that's all the XML file is all of the detail that you have on your website. You can take this XML file and convert it to WordPress, convert it to Drupal, any of the other contact management programs, and it would need this XML file. This is how I convert it from Blogger to WordPress. I did an export, it generated this XML file, and then you basically play the XML file when it loads. And what will happen is once you get to a converter to convert to where you're going, or even Blogger, if let's say you had to go to a whole new Blogger site, it would be very easy because it was a Blogger generated XML file. You'd be able to just now say import from that file and your website would be rebuilt. So that's why the XML file is the standard for your website backup. All right, this is from Joe. Joe commented on the show that Norbert and I did on the Blue Screen of Deaths that Norbert was having a couple weeks ago, and I hope you enjoyed that show. Well, one of the links that I put in the show notes was this link because Joe was listening on Saturday, and he sent it in, and he says, here is a dead simple way to read your blue screens and find out what caused it. And it is www.resplendence.com/main. And that's resplendence.com/main. And I will have that in the show notes. So thank you, Joe, for that. This is from David. And he wants to know, when backing up an external drive, any advantage between a 12-volt powered USB drive and a 5-volt USB drive? Winston in the chat just said a 12-volt takes two USB ports. So keep that in mind. If you have a 5-volt drive, then it's only going to take one USB port. 12-volt takes two. So if you don't have as many USB ports, you might want to look into a drive that only does one. I think only have seen one drive take two, and I wondered why it took two, and that's very interesting. And this was a while ago. I had a client that had a hard drive that took two USB ports, and I was really surprised at that. JRPC Repair, he just got a Western Digital Passport portable 1 terabyte that uses one USB port. Absolutely. The Western Digital Passport, a great drive. I had a client just get three of them so they could rotate them for the backup of their small business server. And it's a small business 2003 server. Love it. The Seagates are the external 2 terabyte drives that Winston likes. Very, very good. And remember, if you're buying these drives, Amazon.com has tremendous prices on these drives. And when you go to buy them or anything else for Amazon, please use the Mike Tech Show link. Use my Amazon link at MikeTechShow.com when you make your purchase, and it contributes to the show. Thank you very, very much for that. This is from Denny, and he says, big fan of the show when you're guest on Computer America. I think you could solo one time on Computer America. I don't think that's going to happen, but I appreciate that. One question. I will be loading Sync backup tonight during your stream and have one question. Can you use three different USB drives to sync to? and have three backups, one stays home, one offsite, and one for Murphy's Law? Absolutely. You would create three different jobs, or what they call profiles, and each one of them would write to the target, to the destination, a different drive. So as you plug each drive in to a USB port, it will be assigned a different letter. In SyncBack, just know which drive you're going to, and you could run three backups. And then what you would then do is create a group that would be kicked off at one given time every night, and then it would then go through each of those three and finish them off. And it could be the same backup over and over again, just going to a target drive. SyncBack would be perfect for that, and it would absolutely work. This is from John, and he says, I'm the guy who emailed in last week, this is going back a couple weeks ago, challenging your statement that the 64-bit OS is the only way to go. I enjoyed hearing my email read on your show, and this is where he responded that there are vertical markets with products and devices that you must consider that may not have a 64-bit driver. And he's absolutely right. And was also humbled by your disagreement of my statement that 2 gig was enough for most folks. See, I disagreed because I believe 4 gig of memory is minimum for Windows 7. To have a nice, yes, it will work with 2, but why just work? Don't you want good performance? Don't you want to get the most out of your operating system? So my minimum is 4. I think, John continues, I think I was short-sighted in my comments about that. Most of our users only run 2 or 3 lightweight apps at a time, so 2 gig is adequate. But I can definitely see your point that 4 should be the minimum, especially since memory is so inexpensive. The Lenovo machines we sell usually come pre-configured with 2 gigs of memory and Windows 7 Pro. But due to your comments, we're going to start adding the extra 2 gig when we sell the machines. Great idea. Thank you. Thanks, Mike. I enjoy your show because I not only benefit from your knowledge and great tips, but I also love listening to you because you bring so much heart to your work. Take care. This is John Newcomb. John, thank you so much for your continued feedback on this, on the topic. This is from another Dave, and he is from Lexington, Kentucky. And this great SyncBack question. I watch your show once in a while. I watched 3 of your latest shows today. One show talked about SyncBack. I downloaded it. I got SyncBack to back up files from one directory and place them on a separate drive and directory, complete with zipping the contents. My question is, can you tell SyncBack to give every backup a unique name each time it runs? Yes. I don't know if the free version can, but I'm positive you can program that in the SE or Pro version. If I compose a .doc file 2 days ago, then change it yesterday, but today I realized the file was correct on the first day, it is too late. That file was overwritten last night. If SyncBack created unique file names, I could go back to any day I want it. I believe you can set that up. So if it sees that, you would want to make it a different file name. Here's what the challenge is. It's the decisions that you program SyncBack when a file is the same name. You can then decide what do you want done. And it's there where you make the changes. So you could have it, which one wins? Does the source win? The destination win? Do you just alert, don't do anything? So you got a lot of options. And this is the option where you can have it change the name. If SyncBack cannot do this, do you have a program that can? I use a program called Backup Plus version 7.6.2 now, but it has not been supported for over 6 years. I'm afraid when I change to 64-bit system, this program will no longer work. Thank you for your time and great show. Dave, let me know. Try the free version, but you may need the SE version of SyncBack, which, again, I believe is only $39. This is from Roy. Regarding show number 341, following, you can find my CMS managing procedure. It is simple, but robust, and will prevent most of the downtimes caused by upgrading or installing new plugins. This is the problem where I installed a plugin and it brought down my WordPress where I could not no longer log in, and I kind of had to go in the back door via FileZilla, remove a plugin in order to be able to get in and manage my website. I have clients using WordPress and Drupal. One, when starting the development process of a website, I downloaded the latest stable version of the chosen content management system. I install the system on a local machine, and then I install it on the development web server. He's absolutely correct there. And I broke one of my cardinal rules. I have multiple websites, and I normally go to mhs.me, which is less important than my miketechshow.com. And I practice on mhs.me. That's where I normally do my updates first. And then if there's a problem, I know I could back it out, fix it, do whatever I want. And it's not my main core production website. Well, I disobeyed that rule when I quickly, it's just a plugin. Let me upgrade it. What could it do? Well, I learned the hard way. Well, here he's setting a procedure up for you to be able to do this locally. Step two. From now on, every update for the core system or to the plugins will be on the local site, and only after completing the development successfully, I install it on the web server. Installing the updates first on the local site is easy and quick and has two advantages. A, I experience all the problems the update would make on the development machine. This leads to clean and quick update on the web server, which means small downtime. I completely agree. B, this way I have the exact same local as on the web. Three, handling the data. There are two general stages on handling data. A, development, the first stage. On this stage, I make all changes on the local system, and when I finish some group of changes, I export full backup of the data and configuration and restore it on the web server using the backup. B, production. In this stage, changes are made by me and by my customer. Every week, I restore on the local machine using the backup from the web server. Hope this helps you with some good ideas. Love the show. Roy, great procedure. And I highly recommend you taking Roy's advice on that. That's some great steps. This is from BW. My wife has a 13-inch MacBook, 80 gig. 2 years ago, I put VMware Fusion on a 20 gig partition. Just recently, I decided to drag and drop the Windows XP and VMware into the trash basket. Now, I want to turn that partition back to usefulness on the main OS X partition to have more usable space. What is the best and easiest way? Thanks. I love the show. This is Bruce. Okay, a couple things on the Mac, Bruce. That one, I know this sounds so simple, but did you empty your trash basket? Because if you empty the trash basket, it will free up the space. Now, given that this is a couple years old, and you've made such a drastic change on the partition like that, where you had 20 gig file for VMware Fusion allocated, and now you want it all back. Even though you don't have to do this, it's very easy. Do you have your original disk that you got your MacBook? You may want to just make sure you back up the data, get all the data backed up to an external drive, pop your original disk in and just blow it away and redo the disk. It's going to be so much easier. And you know what? A fresh install, you're going to feel like you have a brand new computer. And I know that might be a little extra effort, but since you did drag the programs to the trash can and then you empty the contents of the trash can, that space is available. So you should have that space available. And if you don't, you may have to go into the disk diagnostic utility to see what's going on and run a diag of your disk and make sure you don't have any other problems happening. This question is from James. And James corrects me on something. Mike, about the guy who is using Syncback to back up open files. I am surprised that as a Syncback user yourself, you aren't aware that the paid versions of Syncback, SE and Syncback Pro, will back up open files, including Outlook PST files, as do most paid versions of synchronization programs. These applications all use the Microsoft VSS Shadow Copy Service to do this. Regards, James. James, you're right. All I kept thinking is the free version of Syncback. You are absolutely correct, and I stand corrected. Syncback SE, Syncback Pro will be able to back up the open files. And James, thank you so much for letting me know that, or at least reminding me that. I appreciate it. From Jorge. Jorge, I hope everything's going well. Haven't heard from you in a little while. He says, hi, Mike. Not sure if you've covered iDrive in past shows. I've talked about A-Drive, and I haven't even logged into that for a long time, but they used to have a large storage, free storage available online. Well, he came across iDrive, and it's just iDrive.com, and it's free 5 gigs of online space. This utility basically allows you to schedule online backups. You simply download and install iDrive on your computer, select the folders and files to be backed up, and set the schedule. Talk to you later, Jorge. Thank you very much for that. I'll take a look at iDrive. I don't know if I've mentioned it, or maybe a listener in the past, I think, mentioned it when we talk about online sites and online backup storage. But iDrive, another one to check out and add to our list. That's the last question for tonight. I have two songs from the following artist that I want to play. And I have been reminded of this particular artist when I'm watching movies. I always listen to the soundtrack and it always stands out. And I looked up this artist, who's Elliott Smith, and he passed away in 2003, actually a real kind of horrible death where he was stabbed twice and they weren't sure in his chest, and they weren't sure if it was suicide or not. The man is gifted, was very talented, certainly taken at too young of an age, at 34, and he's left behind some great music that is still being used in current movies. Now, this particular song, which is Miss Misery, there was two versions. I'm going to play the version that was used at the end of Good Will Hunting. And this is a very good song. And then I have another one, just a short song that was played in another movie. Give a listen, Miss Misery.
I'll fake it through the day with some help from Johnny Walker Red. Send the poison brain down the drain to put bad thoughts in my head. I seen in a magazine that you'd left lying around. I don't have you with me, but I keep a good attitude. Do you miss me?
Song by Elliott Smith, and a soundtrack that is absolutely worth picking up on Goodwill Hunting. You'll find four or five tracks by Elliott Smith that was used by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in the movie. This was from a newer movie that I caught, you know, the voice was unmistakable and it was up in the air, and this was in the middle of the movie, and I thought very appropriate for tonight because I had a dig out before the show tonight of 18 inches of snow. And I was running late in the pre-show tonight, and I was just moaning about just how sore I am and my family. We're just dead from shoveling and plowing this heavy, wet snow that we were bombarded with tonight. This is Angel in the Snow. Give a listen.
Still alive, that
fell down here to lay beside you.
That was Angels in the Snow, Elliott Smith, and I hope you enjoyed the music that I selected for tonight's show. I will have links to the music and the soundtrack from Good Will Hunting and other selections of Elliott Smith from Amazon.com. That is it for the show tonight. I hope you had a good time. Thank you so much for supporting the show and for downloading and staying subscribed. Spread the word for the Mike Tech Show. Tell some friends, family, anybody who's that you know that might not be listening to the show. Turn them on to the show, and I really appreciate it. That's it. I will talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.